Well, good morning. Welcome back to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. We're glad to have you listening. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Henry Frain is at the controls. Well, on a regular basis, there are surveys that tell us that Americans of all ages, adults and also kids who are in elementary school and high school, have a sometimes rather poor grasp of the shape of their world. In this part of Focus, we'll be talking about geography, the importance of geographic literacy, and about the field of geography. And our guest for the program is Jerome Dobson. He is a professor of geography at the University of Kansas. He is also the president of the American Geographical Society. In addition, he's fellow of the Royal Geographical Society and chair of the Honors Committee of the Association of American Geographers. He is, right at the moment, spending some time traveling across the country to talk about the price of America's geographic ignorance, and also to talk about what might be done to restore geography in the United States. And in fact, today he is on the campus of Illinois State University, Bloomington Normal. He'll be giving a talk on the topic Restoring Geography in America this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Which takes place in the Bowling and Billiard Center. And I'm sure that anyone on the campus or around Central Illinois that would be interested in attending should definitely feel welcome. As we talk here this morning on the program, of course, your questions and comments are welcome, just as always. The number, if you'd like to give us a call, 333-9455. That's for people who are here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. But anyone can call in. If it would be a long-distance call, use our toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. The only thing we ask of callers is that people just are brief so that we can get in as many people as possible and keep the program moving along. But, of course, anyone interested in calling should feel welcome. Professor Dobson, hello.
Hi. Hi, it's good to be here.
Well, we appreciate very much you giving us some of your time. Certainly from time to time, we hear these kind of surveys testing that are the result of testing people's geographic knowledge. For example, just one recent one that was done, I guess this was done in 2006. It was done by the Roper folks at the behest of the National Geographic Society. And they found some things like this. For example, they gave young people a map of the Middle East and said, can you find Iraq? And only 37% could find Iraq on the map, even though, of course, the U.S. has been much involved there since 2003. They also found things like 20% of the people in their survey thought that Sudan was in Asia. And half of the Americans, for example, half of young Americans, again, participating in the survey, couldn't find New York on a map. And this kind of thing, this is not the first survey of its kind that demonstrates that young people, and I'm not sure how much better adults would do if we could put them through the same test, have a pretty poor grasp of the geography, not only of the United States, of the world. Do you think that is generally indicative of geographical literacy or illiteracy among the population as a whole?
Well, there's no question that it is an indicator of the real state of geographic ignorance in the country, but it means more to me because I recognize that knowing where they are, knowing where those places are, is just the tip of the iceberg. You also, as a geographer, would try to understand how those places function, how people living in those places interact with their physical environment, where they are, why they do what they do, where they do it. Geography is a science. It's a much broader way of understanding the earth, and yet the public only knows about geography as place name geography. In mm-hmm. fact, that's the least of what we expect budding young geographers to learn. And I'm often, I have mixed feelings about these surveys that come out because they just reinforce that idea that geography is only about knowing where things are. And in fact, if that's all it was, I wouldn't be interested in it. But geography is understanding how the world works. And if you ask a geographer what defines the discipline. They will tell you it's spatial thinking, thinking about where things are. I often say that geography is to space what history is to time. But that image never gets across to the public. Now, the other image that we see in those polls is exactly the one you allude to, that typically people think it's something that high school students ought to know and high school students don't know it. But they forget that adults need to know it too. And I'll give you two clear examples. Just this past weekend, there was a news item that Vice President Cheney was speaking about Hugo Chavez, who is president of Venezuela, and he referred to Peru in all of his comments, so he confused Venezuela with Peru. So even at that place name locational level, there are problems. But I'm much more concerned with the fact that most Americans don't understand that geography is the science behind precision bombing, or that geography would help us to understand how tsunamis work and how they are going to how they would affect how many people would be at risk in a tsunami event. Those are the sorts of things that we look at from inside the profession, and the place name geography is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. Well, I know this is certainly something that you are concerned about and want to talk about. And I know I've read, for example, an article on the subject dealing with some of these issues that you've written, where in one place you write, "There is today no greater gulf of knowledge than that which lies between the public understanding of geography and the reality of what geographers actually do." So that, I suppose, invites the question, why is it that is the case, that when people think about geography, they think that this is just pretty much a business of where things are, and this enhanced appreciation for the variety of areas in which geographers work, why is that the case?
Well, if you only had elementary level, let's say you only had through the fifth grade in math, you probably would think arithmetic is just about multiplication tables, or that mathematics is just about the multiplication tables, and you wouldn't know about advanced formulas. That's what's happened with geography. We've only taught the most fundamental introductory level. And I ask my students in an introductory college class, how many of you have ever had geography at any level before? And about 10% of them raise their hands. So in a sense, we're teaching a remedial course that should have been taught in the fifth grade, and we're having to teach in college. I actually saw a set of French geography textbooks one time, first through fifth grade, and by the fifth grade they had taught all the basic principles that we teach in the first introductory college courses in this country.
Well, here this gets at another point, and in this same piece you write that geography has been neglected to an extent no other discipline has faced in modern times. And I think your concern here is indeed at geography as it's taught, perhaps all the way through school, but certainly at college and university level. I'm sure that geography, principles of geography, are embedded in other subjects, but why do you think it is as a discipline that somehow it has declined?
I've referred to it as a purge. I think if you look at the removal of geography from major programs, Harvard in 1948, Stanford right after that, Yale after that, Columbia, Northwestern, Chicago, Michigan, geography was moved in what was probably a very separate decision at each place, but for some reason it became a systematic removal of geography from the highest levels of academe. And then it was removed from the high schools. Then it was then in elementary school it was rolled into this mishmash they call social studies, which ignores physical geography and spatial thinking. So it's been systematically removed. I'm not suggesting, that's not a conspiracy theory, I'm not saying there was somebody behind that. I'm saying there was some factor that caused American academia to treat geography in that way, while it remained in force in other countries. I visited the Charles University in Prague Czech Republic, and they have five geography departments there, each of them as large or larger than we would have for a single geography department here. A good friend of mine has a degree from Yale, and he was visiting in Europe one time, and a professor there asked him to tell him about the geography department at Yale, and he said, well, they don't have one. And the fellow looked very stunned for a moment, and then he said, I thought Yale was a university.
I suppose one natural kind of conclusion would be this decline in the interest in geography and in geography as a subject of instruction had something to do with the post-Cold War dominance of the United States. You know, the criticism often has been made of Americans that they don't really think it's important that they know anything about any place else because the United States has been such a dominant force geopolitically. Do you think that, in fact, had anything to do with it?
It certainly could. You look at that 1948 at Harvard was just right after the formation of the United States Intelligence Community. The CIA was formed in 47, I guess, and the United Nations formed in 47. And it does appear to be sort of a handoff of responsibility. I also think it might be helpful, though, to look back and think of what happened in World War II. Geopolitics, led by geographers, was a big issue, and Hitler's geographer, Karl Haushofer, was the author of the Lebensraum theory that justified his conquest of neighbors. That was obviously very unpopular and should be unpopular, and I wonder if to some extent we threw out the baby with the bathwater, forgetting that the geographers on this side had led to victory and had been very good in their intent. I also think it might help to have a broader perspective, too, and look at America's attitude toward isolationism. We were an isolationist country from our founding until World War One, and then we have that era from World War One through World War Two, where we were really engaging as a society. We were really engaging in global geopolitics. And then after World War Two, a lot of those professors, even geography professors, who had been prominent in decision making in World War II, went back to their home universities, settled down, and were perfectly happy not to rule the world. And I wonder if that didn't happen among the general population as well. That we were, after World War II, we were sort of turned off on those global responsibilities.
We have some callers here to bring into the conversation, and I want to do that as well as introduce again the guest for anyone who might just have tuned in the last few minutes. We're talking with, on this morning's program, Jerome Dobson. He is professor of geography at the University of Kansas, and he's also currently the president of the American Geographical Society and is spending some time traveling around talking about the importance of geography as a base of knowledge and as a discipline, and he is on the campus of Illinois State University, and we'll be giving a talk this afternoon at 4 on the campus there, so anyone who is there in the neighborhood should feel welcome to stop by. That's at 4 o'clock in the Bowling and Billiard Center on ISU campus, and it's sponsored by the Department of Geography and Geology there at ISU. Questions are welcome, too. Comments, people want to be a part of the conversation, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. We'll start here with someone on our toll-free line, our line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a good topic of a conversation. You know, do you think that maybe the decline in study of is attributed to, say, the computer sciences coming up instead of, you know, anything else because of the modernization? The modernization, can't even say it this morning. The modernization of the country itself with the computers, everybody seems to be focusing more on, computers and math and the engineering aspect versus anything else. Do you think that might have something to do with it?
No, actually, I'd have to disagree with that on two grounds. One is that it started before the computers became really widespread, 48 on. The other thing more telling, though, is that geographic information systems are the computerized form of geography, and they are booming right now. They are the most popular thing we do and are revolutionizing society. They are actually helping us get some recognition rather than hurting us.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question.
All right, thank you. On to someone here, line number one. Hello.
Hello. You might be interested in the following from Ambrose Bierce's Devil's Dictionary.
Oh.
That war is a process introduced by God to teach the Americans geography.
Yes, yes. I often quote that. It's a good statement. I usually trim it down a bit, make it a little streamlined, but yeah, it's a very true statement. If you now, of course, I'm sure he was thinking of place name geography. I wonder how many people would know where Iwo Jima or Guadalcanal would ever have heard of those places if it hadn't been a war there.
Mm-hmm.
But I've said the modern corollary of that is that war is God's way of teaching GIS, the Geographic Information System, because they're so much in demand right now by everyone, Homeland Security, the military, government, business, everybody is demanding those now. And they're a major part of the response to the terrorist threats. I led an effort at Oak Ridge National Laboratory before I went to the University of Kansas to develop the most precise global population database that's ever been devised, and the purpose of that was to estimate populations at risk in cases of terrorism. The story, have you heard the story of what happened in New York with the GIS there after September 11th attack on the World Trade Center? The city of New York had one of the most exquisite three-dimensional GIS systems on Earth. It had all the streets, all the buildings, the utility systems were in it. But it was housed in Number 7 World Trade Center. So it was destroyed in the attack. And at that moment, the only copy in existence was with the geographers out at Hunter College, a good friend of mine, Sean Ahern, literally unplugged his computers, put them in his van, and drove them down to the new operations center. And they sent out a call for GIS volunteers. About 50 of them showed up and worked around the clock till they got that going. And so they were able to compare new imagery of the rubble heap and know where structural features of the buildings had been. They took the image daily so they could see if the rubble heap was shifting in any way that might threaten a collapse that would risk the workers, and they were using thermal imagery to follow the spread of fires underneath. So it's just a good example of how geographic information systems can aid in real-time emergency response.
Yeah, what that illustrates is just how important it is to have good maps, essentially, to have good representations of the world as it exists at any point in time.
Excellent point, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You in addition to arguing that geography has been devalued and that has consequences, you also seem to be saying that though really it is now there's a great opportunity for a resurgence of geography in part, I suppose, because of the very thing that you're talking about, because now that people have really come to appreciate the national security dimensions of I guess my way of putting it would be having good maps.
Yes, I've said that if you look, there is a resurgence that's happening right now. Let me go back historically and say though that the 50-year period from 1948 until about now has been a historic anomaly. If you look at the popularity of geography in classic times, it was one of the earliest and most sophisticated of sciences during the Greek and Roman and even Chinese classical periods. Then it goes out and becomes a fantasy during the Dark Ages. It comes back around 1400. In the 1400s because of exploration and around the 1600s because of interest in westward expansion, and people need to know what was out there if they're going out there to the New World or across the New World. And then there was that period of geopolitics between the two world wars, and all of that came to an end simultaneously in the late 1940s. So we had this period that I refer to as the not-so-great interruption, And at the end of that, we're seeing some positive signs with what's bringing us back. GIS is bringing us back to the front. War is bringing interest back to geography. Globalization, people are meeting people from those areas, and they're going to those areas around. There's more interchange of people around the globe. And then the fourth thing is sustainability, understanding how the globe is going to survive this population pressure that's under right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, just as a way of trying to draw this out a little bit, I'm wondering, I suppose, that some people would recognize the importance of geography, but if they would say, well, if we have geographers that are housed within, say, departments of anthropology or political science or geology or sociology or within these other disciplines, do we need to have a department of geography as a distinct entity?
The president of a small liberal arts college in California, Pomona College, very prestigious university, has made that argument very formally, and he and I have had an exchange in our newsletter called Ubique. His argument is that you don't need geographers to teach geography. That's a little different from what you just said, because he's saying anybody can teach it as well as a geographer can. You're saying have a geographer in another department, but that's not the way it works. What happens exactly as he said it, they end up assigning a geography course to someone who is not a geographer. And what I have raised in my response to him is, why is there this exception for geography? Why is it that every other discipline is obsessed with academic credentials? You have to have your degree, your publications, and everything in that field in order to teach anthropology, chemistry, physics, biology, the list goes on. But why there is this exception for geography, I cannot imagine.
And you, again, I suppose we keep coming back to this question of trying to puzzle out what it is that happened to geography, particularly starting in the immediate post-war period, mm-hmm. and why it is that they seem to have gone into a period of decline. It sounds as if there's lots of speculation, but at the end of the day, I suppose no one, it sounds as if no one truly knows.
No one truly knows. You're exactly right. I've never seen a dissertation, for example, where a student of history has gone out and tried to figure that one out. I would love to see that. There are a few books that tell you what happened, but none that really delve in and explain why it happened.
Are there places where I think particularly of, I guess I'm thinking particularly about elementary, secondary education, places where there has been some movement to restore geography as geography?
Oh, yeah. There are a few states that require it. Mm-hmm. I forget the number, but something like maybe somewhere between a dozen and a half states. States have some kind of requirement for a geography course at some level in elementary or high school. The other issue is, do they require a geography degree to teach that? And fewer of them require a geography degree to teach it. There's an old standard joke: what's the most common first name for a high school geography teacher? And the answer is coach.
Mm-hmm. May also be the common first name for people teaching geometry and a lot of other things as well. Are there places, you know, given that, as you said, particularly in this period, say from right after the war up until the late 80s, when you find geography as a discipline disappearing from some important places like University of Chicago and Harvard and Michigan and Northwestern, have there been any efforts then now to restore and rebuild those departments at those places or other places where they have disappeared?
Well, there's some interesting developments. First, let me say that there's a huge difference between, if you take the list of the top 20 private universities in the country, only two of them have geography departments. Conversely, if you take a list of the top 20 public universities, 15 of them have geography departments. So it has survived. It's just not where you expected to find it. And it's the distinction there is that those top private schools are the ones that are feeding the policy community, feeding students into the policy community, influencing science policy, government, federal, foreign policy, and so forth, much more than the public universities do. What we're seeing now is that there is actually a resurgence of geography, but it's happening in the departments that already existed. If you had a bachelor's degree, you may be adding a master's degree. If you had a master's degree, you may be adding a PhD. So that's happening in places where it exists. There have only been five new departments in schools that did not have a geography department. In the last 10 years, there have only been five new geography departments. And those are at relatively small schools. So we have not seen a return at Harvard or Columbia, Yale, some of the powerhouses of geography before World War II. I would note there is an interesting development at Harvard. They have established a Center for Geographic Analysis, but its emphasis is geographic information systems, in other words, the computerized form of geography. I've likened that to establishing a word processing center without an English department. Harvard actually had a major role in initiating GIS. They were one of the four early centers in the 1960s that started GIS, but it was mislabeled as computer graphics, and it didn't get the kind of respect in the academic side that it needed, and it failed. The center there went out of existence. So now they're trying again, and they haven't learned their lesson. They're still not tying it to the intellectual force of geography.
And I suppose what all this tells you is that it's a much more difficult matter to restore a department from nothing than it is to take one that maybe has been starved of resources.
Yes.
and decide that you're going to then build it up.
Particularly where there are still lingering resentments and embarrassments over events that happened in the 1940 to 1980 time period when they abolished geography. So bringing it back where it used to be is tougher than bringing it into a new place.
Just very quickly, let me introduce again the guest for anyone who might have just joined us. We're talking with Dr. Jerome Dobson. He is professor of geography at the University of Kansas. He is also president of the American Geographical Society. He's a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society and chair of the Honors Committee of the Association of American Geographers. He is spending some time traveling around the country to talk about the importance of geography as a discipline, restoring it in the U.S., some of the consequences of geographic ignorance, something certainly he is very concerned about and talks about and writes about quite a lot. He's now visiting the campus of Illinois State University, Bloomington Normal, and we'll be talking about restoring geography in America this afternoon at 4, his talk in the Bowling and Billiard Center. And I'm sure anyone there in the area should feel welcome to stop by and hear what he has to say. And, of course, questions are welcome, too, on this program, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think it might be interesting to have you talk just a little bit more about what, for government, now we've talked about the fact that now national security concerns mean that this kind of information is now even more important than ever. It's not to say that it wasn't important before 9/11, but now it's perhaps more important. What kind of information is it that that government and government agencies are looking for from geographers and from the discipline geography?
Well, what has happened particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan is that the military and the intelligence agencies get it. They know that they missed out and that people are dying because they don't understand the culture. They know that they need it. I've been to conferences where the focus was not on geography, it was on problems that they have to solve in dealing with Iraq and culture wars in general. And they know to turn to cultural anthropology, that culture is in the name of cultural anthropology. Many of them know they need geography, they just don't know to call it that. So one of our missions is to get the word out that what's missing is geography, not to say that it's not cultural anthropology, not to say that it's not history either, but make them aware that a key component that's missing is cultural geography and the spatial understanding of where things are. Even if the cultural anthropologist, identifies a cultural trait that matters, they still got to specify where it is, and if they specify it, they're going to have to start thinking geographically.
Hmm. I would thought it might be interesting to have you talk a little bit about some of the work that you've been involved in, and I think that one of the things that caught my eye that I thought was very interesting and very significant was that some of the work that you've been doing that involves mapping landmines.
Yes.
and minefields. And this is something that I don't know, I imagine we probably touched on it, but something that people need to appreciate, that in some places around the world that have either ongoing or long-ended conflicts, there are uncounted numbers of landmines, and they're out there, and in fact a lot of them nobody knows where they are, and often it just happens that someone stumbles across one and can be maimed or killed, and that it's a very, very serious issue for places that are trying to develop, that there are these countless numbers of these things just waiting there to kill somebody.
Right.
I'd be interested in hearing about and having you talk about
Yes.
some of the work.
They are uncounted, as you say. The rough number that you hear batted about is 40 to 50 million landmines in the ground today. Hmm. And that involves principally about 80 countries. About 60 of those countries have signed the Anti-Landmine Treaty, the Ottawa Mine Ban Treaty. And if you sign that treaty, you are committing to get rid of your landmines within 10 years. So the organization that I work with is in the Geneva International Center for Humanitarian Demining. They're, you can think of them as an arm of the United Nations. They're actually an arm of the Swiss government, but it's an in-kind contribution to the United Nations. They are the organization that helps these countries technologically and in many other ways to remove their mines. So they came to us. I was at a landmine meeting in Ljubljana, Slovenia, and I met the head of that program, and this was 2003, I guess it was. And they asked us if we could help them evaluate a new system for mapping minefields without walking on them. And the way it works, you have a handheld geographic information system that keeps up with all the information. You have a wireless connection to a global positioning system receiver, a GPS unit, that tells you your coordinates, and then a set of binoculars, that wireless connection to binoculars that will tell you the distance, azimuth, and elevation of anything that you look at, so X, Y, Z coordinates of anything you look at. Then the GIS reconciles all that and produces a polygon to show where the minefield is. Now, let me make it clear that this is not for detecting mines. It is for mapping minefields once they have been identified.
Oh, okay.
And the old method would have been compass and tape. You would have had literally, in fact, most of the world right now, you would have minefield mappers getting down on their hands and knees with a compass and a tape, and that's very dangerous. So this is to create better data, faster, more accurate, less human error, and much, much safer. Now, there's an irony in that most of the money to do this sort of thing has gone into that detection issue. And you're not unusual in thinking that detection is everything.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that it doesn't matter whether there are mines there or not. If the local people think there are mines there, then they won't use the land. And they won't cross it to go to the water source, or they won't plow it. So it takes exactly the same effort, exactly the same money, the same procedures, everything, to clear it whether there are any mines there or not. So most of that goes on as a negotiation with the local people. And that stray mine that's out there waiting to be stumbled upon by an animal or a child, that's there's no sensor in the world that's going to find that reliably for you, even in spite of all the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent on that. The way mines are removed today is exactly the way you saw him in the old World War II movie. Someone gets down on his hands and knees, and he uses a probe and sticks it in the ground every 2.5 centimeters, and the biggest improvement since World War II is they use a fiberglass probe instead of a metal bayonet, so it won't set off magnetic charges. Hmm. But the other thing that we did in that same project, and of equal importance, is the agency asked us to develop a new cartographic standard for how landmines will be represented on maps. And the geography professor here at Illinois State University is the one who actually did that. He wrote the scheme, and now his standard is the world standard. His name's John Kostelnik, and he's here on the geography faculty at ISU. And he was given the task, and he developed the standard, and now the American Geographical Society is promulgating the standard.
Mm-hmm. I wonder nowadays the technology to know where you are. I think virtually anywhere. You know, there may be, in fact, blind spots. I don't know, but essentially, relatively inexpensive technology to know where you are. Any place, it's easily obtainable to a lot of people, to most people. I wonder global positioning. What sort of impact that has had on? On the practical matter of physical geography, and just this matter of figuring out at any one point where you are,
it's impossible to say how great it. I mean, in other words, it's so great it cannot be expressed how much impact that is having on society. So you're exactly right. Let me just give you kind of an odd example, but we've been working with indigenous people in Mexico where we give them GPS units so they can go out and map their farm plots and resources. They're using that to establish their legal right to own that land. They're using it to protect their resources. And the last time we came back at the end of a we'll leave them in the summer and then come back the next summer and pick them up, or pick up the data. And the last time we went back into an area in Oaxaca, these farmers in this native indigenous area had mapped an archaeological site that had never been revealed before. They had had it for, they had known about it, but they wouldn't tell anybody about it. Now, because they trusted our investigator, Peter Herlihy, he's a geographer at the University of Kansas, and because they had those GPS coordinates to map it and feel that they could protect it then by having documented knowledge of it, they revealed it was a substantial site with a plaza and pyramids, and they had never told anybody about it before, but because they could document it, they trusted.
It's a technology, as I said, and I'm sure people understand, it's a technology that now is quite affordable, and likely in the future we will have more devices that have this capacity built into them, not only so that you will know where you are, but so other people will know where you are. There are some benefits. One can imagine, for example, if you were severely injured somewhere and you couldn't speak for yourself, and maybe if you had a cell phone, it would tell emergency authorities where you were so that they could get there to help you. And it seems like a clear benefit. But this does, now that we are in a time where there is increasing concerns about loss of privacy and the ability of someone, maybe government or someone, to monitor our movements, is this something that you think is worth concern, that there is in fact a downside, and with as many benefits as this technology has, that there also are some concerns?
Well, you stated it well, but you've understated it. I think it's the most one of the most important aspects of the entire information revolution. I've written quite a bit about it, And what I've said is that it may well be the greatest threat to personal freedom we have ever experienced. Surveillance gives power. And for the first time in history, anyone can surveil anyone else. We used to think of surveillance as being a government activity or maybe a major corporation activity. And I figured the cost on it, it cost in the old days, even 10 years ago, if you wanted to surveil someone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it would cost you about $350,000 a year to do that. Now, with GPS, you can do a better job for less than $500 a year. So instead of something that was only affordable for espionage and corporate espionage and international intrigue, now it's possible for everybody. So we're going to see abuses, and some of them are going to be horrendous. It's going to be there because there's so many benefits. The benefits are so great that society cannot resist it, but at the same time, we're going to see abuses to the point that my co-author in one article, my co-author is the editor of the International Journal of Geographical Information Science. So here are two long-term insiders of the GIS revolution saying, we recognize that our technology has created a threat and we want you to know about it. And we said in that article that society has to contemplate a new form of slavery characterized by location control, and we called it geo-slavery.
It's a startling and frightening possibility, and I suppose that there are some people who would say that your concern is something of an overreaction. But I suppose at the same time that we shouldn't say that's not something that we shouldn't be thinking about or considering that the possibility, the technology is there, and all it would take is someone who decided that they wanted to push in that direction. And it wouldn't be, it sounds as if from the way that you have written about it, I know I've read some of the things that you have said, it wouldn't take much of a push to actually get to that point.
Well, you know, people tell me that it's an people tell me I should have used a less inflammatory word, for example. But when I go out and look on the web right now, you can Google on the term geo-slavery, and you will find, say, 15,000 citations. And many of those are government panels looking into it, university scholars writing about it. I only find one or two that even say that it's an alarmist term. In fact, one says it's a suitably alarmist term. But really, I see it being taken seriously. I see it in college curricula, in courses that people are teaching at colleges. So I don't think it's been accepted as an overreaction by the community as a whole. There is a within that, there are some people who took it to mean something I didn't intend for it to mean. They think it means any kind of surveillance. And we were very clear that we're talking about location control based on surreptitious or coercive placement of these devices. So, but, you know, U.S. workers are accepting what's called geofencing, exactly the same thing, except they've opted in. They've chosen to be in that because they want a job. There are social consequences to that, but it's not geo-slavery.
We have about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Jerome Dobson. He is professor of geography at University of Kansas. He also is president of the American Geographical Society and spending some time traveling around talking about a concern of his, and I'm sure others in his field share the concern, and that is both that Americans, what they know about geography is not what it should be, and also that they would like to see geography as a discipline restored in education at all levels, in the primary, secondary, and at the university level. He is today spending the day at Illinois State University, Bloomington Normal, and we'll talk there this afternoon at 4 o'clock. So again, anyone who's interested should stop by the Bowling and Billiard Center. He'll be talking about restoring geography in America today at ISU. And questions, certainly welcome. Somebody wants to get in here real quick. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I'm just curious how it is that you became interested in geography and decided that that was what you were going to study and go on and make your career.
I love telling that story. I think we must be born into it, or in or out. I was at the University of Georgia pursuing a bachelor's degree. I was in my junior year, and one afternoon my college roommate came home and said he had decided to switch to his major to geography. And I said, "You can major in geography?" And I got up the next morning and changed my major to geography. I knew, once I knew there was such a thing, I knew it was me. And certainly, I've certainly never regretted that decision. Unfortunately, he didn't have the grades to switch and never got to switch. But
so this must obviously have been something that you would have said from when you were young. It was a passion, an interest, something that you just really were so much into that if someone had told you that you could have done that, you would have said, "Oh yeah, right. I want to do that."
Right. And after I wrote that, you mentioned that article I wrote about bringing back geography. After that, I just got this outpouring, over 100 people writing me emails and letters about their experiences, and there's a poignancy to it. People saying how hard they tried to get a geography degree, but it wasn't offered where they went to school, or how late in coming they learned about geography, and how unhappy they were in their chosen major. I even know one case where a fellow switched to geology, thinking that his friend was a geologist, and he envied his friend's opportunity so much he switched to geology, and it turned out, you know, the friend was a geographer, and he ended up going in the wrong discipline by mistake.
Let's talk with another caller here. We have at least one in the time that remains, and this is our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, I just tuned in and was intrigued to hear what you're talking about today. Of course, geography and education is very important. Seems like it isn't emphasized enough in my view. And also the geo-slavery concept, to hear that, I want to commend WILL and the professor for bringing that up.
It's a
trend, and it's a trend that future generations will have to deal with, and it's a frightening one, honestly. It's just something, a component of technology that has a ominous overtone to it, and you don't hear it much from the academic world or from public radio. So I commend you for having it on today.
All right. Well, I thank you for the call. I don't know if you feel we've adequately covered that. Is there anything you'd like to add on to what you had said about it?
I would add that we came down to a choice in our presidential election this time. John Edwards, a few years ago, actually proposed a locational privacy act. It never was passed and never became an issue in his subsequent elections. Conversely, Tommy Thompson went to work for one of these companies that installs chips in children, and he at one point said he was going to have himself chipped, but now he was in the presidential election, he said he didn't. That never became an issue in his campaign. He lost in Iowa caucus, but it was asked at a few news conferences with him, but it never became a big issue with the public, and that's what's disturbing, is the public not looking at the issues.
Yeah, I guess this is one of the things where it comes up, and people will try and make the argument that it might be a useful thing and to deal with the issue of missing abducted children, that you would be able to find out where, or if you just wanted to know at any given time where your children were, that would be something that would be useful. But I guess that there are all kinds of reasons to think very carefully about whether, in fact, that really would be a good thing to do or not.
Well, less than $500 a year, suppose your daughter comes home and tells you that she and her boyfriend, instead of exchanging college rings, are going to exchange GPS tracking devices. We could have those sorts of social issues, right? We will have them. I mean, I think it's coming. But people haven't thought it through yet. And for example, they talk about the kid tracking, but there's nothing to stop those systems from being used by others. There's not nothing to stop them from being used by kidnappers, for that matter. There's no fail-safe in the system that would guard against that. The people at these private firms that do the monitoring, they don't have to go through background checks like a daycare center worker would.
Well, we're at the point here we're going to have to finish, I guess, to round us out to the point where we started. One of the things that your purpose in traveling around and talking is to talk about the importance of geography,
right,
and what has happened to geography in American schools, even in American universities. But also to end on a positive note, you think that we're really at a point here where geography is poised to make a comeback?
No question. It is poised. I think a lot of us from the inside are wondering how it's going to play out here. I've seen one university where the geography department started doing GIS. It was so attractive they were adopted by the science and technology school, and then the science and technology school said, "Well, we like this GIS stuff, but we're not that happy about it. We don't understand this geography." So they got rid of the geography. So it can work against us. It can come back around and work against us. But by and large, it is very positive right now. As I said, there are new new master's programs and new PhD programs and a few new undergraduate programs.
Well, there we must stop with our thanks to our guest, Jerry Dobson. He's professor of geography at the University of Kansas. He is also president of the American Geographical Society. And I want to mention one more time that he today is on the campus of Illinois State University, Bloomington-Normal, where he'll be talking about restoring geography in America this afternoon at 4 at the Bowling and Billiard Center. And I'm sure anyone who is interested in hearing more from him should feel welcome and should stop by. And Professor Dobson, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it. Good questions from you and the audience.
All right. Support for our show, Focus 580, comes from the Infant Parent Institute, celebrating its 20th anniversary in Champaign. The Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infantparent.com. That is it for us here on Focus 580, but we want you to stay tuned. There's much more in the way of news, weather, sports, features, other things, all coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. And the host for that show is Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we'll rebroadcast an interview about Sam Cooke, our guest back in January of 2006, was biographer, music historian, and novelist Peter Guralnick, author of Dream Boogie, The Triumph of Sam Cooke. We'll rebroadcast that at 1:06 Central Time this afternoon. Let's take a look at commodity prices now. In Kansas City, December wheat trading at $7.74, down 15. To Chicago now, where the December wheat contract is trading at $7.49.5, down 12.5. March, $7.67, down 22. July, $6.71, down 10.5. December corn, $3.86.5, down 3. March, $4.03, down 3.25. May, $4.13, down 3.25. And